Matthew chapter 5. And before I launch into my text for the morning, I'd like to begin by telling you three stories. Three stories. Story number one. Yesterday, I read the story of four high school students who were late to school one day. Of course, none of our high school students are ever late to school. These four students entered first period, very tardy, and they stood before the teacher and they solemnly explained to the teacher why they were tardy. It was because their car had a flat tire, and so that's why they were late. And so the sympathetic teacher, she smiled at them and she said, it's too bad that you're late because you missed a test earlier this morning. And she continued, I'm willing to allow you to make up the test on one condition. Here is a pencil and here is some paper. Go sit in the four corners of the room and answer one question. Which tire was flat? And by the way, leave your cell phones with me. No texting. Story number two. Among the small crowd of military veterans and Marines, the two-star general stood out. At the Ramona VFW's annual Marine Corps birthday celebration last November 7th, David Weber was treated as the honored guest. He even received the first piece of birthday cake in accordance with tradition. Intrigued by the two stars on Weber's shoulder boards, the combat air crewman insignia above all of his medals, Lieutenant Todd Aneto struck up a conversation with the retired officer. A photographer from a local newspaper captured the moment, and the photographs on the internet, I would have projected it today, but the resolution is too dark for us to be able to see it the size we need. But Weber told Aneto about enlisting in the Marine Corps at the age of 17. In fact, one of our graduates who is standing here is enlisting in the Marine Corps in a few months. And so this Weber gentleman said, I enlisted in the Marine Corps at the age of 17. And he talked about his first promotion or his promotion to first lieutenant. And less than a week later, Aneto learned that Weber's stories had stretched the truth. Weber was never a major general. He was never even commissioned as an officer. Weber did serve in the Marine Corps during the late 1950s and early 1960s, and he was exposed after a photograph of him and Aneto appeared in Ramona's community newspaper, the Ramona Sentinel, along with a story about his purported exploits while on active duty. And this gentleman, David Weber, had regaled the reporter with tales of secret undercover work and covert missions and operations that stretched from submarines to the CIA to the rooftop of an embassy in Saigon in 1975. At first, the article sparked curiosity. Then it shot across the internet, reaching officials at Marine Corps headquarters, and soon an officer with the Marine Corps Inspector General's office contacted Weber. And days later, the Ramona Sentinel newspaper ran another story about Weber, and the headline read, Two-Star General Who Wasn't. 2 months ago, the newspaper tells a story. This is a San Diego newspaper dated April 16, 2010. It tells a story that this man, David Weber, was given 3 years probation for dressing as a Marine general and wearing Marine medals that he did not earn. And he'll also have to do 240 hours of community service and pay a fine of $500. After the sentencing hearing, Weber spoke briefly by saying, quote, it was a bonehead thing, end quote, but not offering much other insight. He goes on and says, quote, it was stupid. I just did it, and I'm very sorry. end quote. True story. Here in San Diego County, David Weber, a fake Marine officer. Story number three. In 2001, George O'Leary left Georgia Tech University to take over as the head coach of the University of Notre Dame. And a few days after he was hired, it was discovered that he had inaccuracies on his resume. On the resume, O'Leary claimed that he had earned a master's degree from, quote, NYU Stony Brook University, end quote. It's a non-existent institution. It's actually two separate institutions that lie some 50 miles apart, NYU and Stony Brook University. In fact, he'd only taken two classes at NYU, and he never graduated, and he also claimed to earn three letters in football at the University of New Hampshire when the school claimed that he had not even played in one game. Notre Dame initially supported their new football coach, O'Leary. But when discrepancies concerning his athletic career at New Hampshire came to light, they were like, okay, we'll work with you on this. And he assured the school that there's nothing else to know, nothing else to come out. When further background checks found that O'Leary had falsified his academic credentials as well, the school asked for his resignation on December 13, 2001. O'Leary said in a statement released that day, quote, due to a selfish and thoughtless act many years ago, I have personally embarrassed Notre Dame, its alumni and fans, end quote. And O'Leary blamed the inaccuracies on, in his words, quote, resume padding, end quote. It happens all the time. Resume padding. May I tell you that it has been known that pastors have even padded their resumes. These three stories introduce us to the subject of truthfulness. And that's what Jesus will unpack for us today in the Sermon on the Mount. Now, if you've been with us on our journey, you may remember a couple of weeks ago when we were looking at Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 to 20, where Jesus said, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will not inherit the kingdom of God. And some of you were here. How many of you were here the day when I had the baseball bat? No one messed with me that day. And in fact, my wife and I were walking in this morning and she said, can I help you carry something? And I said, why don't you carry this sweet little bag that I had? And let me carry the bat, because it doesn't look very ladylike for you to be walking across a church campus with a bat. So, but anyway, I need a couple volunteers. Come on over here, Mr. Sawyer. Why don't you bring Brett Murdoch with you? Brett. And why don't you bring Anna with you, Brett? Okay, come on. I'm sorry, camera guy, I'll do the best I can not to make everyone sick. Okay, so you are the batter, okay? So you stand right here. And Brett, you're going to pitch. So you go stand over there. And Anna, we'll pretend that you are the umpire.
Okay.
Okay, so. Okay, you're not going to throw. That's why I didn't bring two mitts. You cannot throw a ball in this room. I would like to continue pastoring College Avenue. Okay, and so you remember a couple of weeks ago when we did the baseball analogy to help us understand really what's going on in the Sermon on the Mount, that I talked about Pastor Mark being my pitching coach, and you guys harassed me because of my pitching form. Some of you took jabs at me, and he took a jab at me. That's why he's on vacation today. But I didn't want him here. So Brett is the pitcher, and Anna is the umpire, and you are the hitter, Steve. So let's get ready. Let's just pretend, but don't hit Anna, please. Okay, so, and do not throw this ball. Okay, so we're playing ball, and she's the umpire, and so Brett winds up. Here's the wind up in the pitch. High. Ball one. Wind up in the pitch. Come on, hurry up. Low. Ball two. Wind up in pitch. Outside. Ball three. Wind up in pitch. Inside. Ball four. He gets to go to first base. So imagine, just stand there for a moment. So imagine, you know, Brett's very mild-mannered, very easygoing guy, very flexible, very passive. And imagine Brett talking to the umpire, and you see the umpire has her hands on her hips like this. And Brett says to her, "What's the problem? I mean, I threw four good pitches. What are you calling them balls for?" Saying high and low and inside and outside. And she goes, "They're all balls. You didn't get the ball over the plate. You didn't do it." And he goes, "Well, what are you talking about? Just make the strike zone wider." And she goes, "We can't make the strike zone wider. It is what it is. This is the strike zone. You didn't throw the ball over the plate. But what do you mean? Why don't you just change the rules? Give me some slack. Come on." And she goes, "No, I'm not. Either you pitch. Obviously, you can't pitch. And so maybe you should consider playing first base, especially since you're playing with a first baseman's mitt anyway. Or maybe, better yet, Brett, you should consider DHing and not pitching or even playing first base." You see the look on his face?
I don't think she'd say that.
You don't think she'd say that, but she did. So you can go be seated. Okay. So thank you. I'll take my bat. So what the religious leaders wanted, they wanted to take God's law and make it easier to meet it, to follow it, to reduce it. So they wanted an extra wide plate. You also might remember a couple of weeks ago, I brought these physical therapy things and one of them snapped on me. That was scary. But I said to you, what they want to do is they want to reduce God's commands instead of stretching them. So they're stretching them to reduction instead of stretching them to obey more. And that's what they're doing here in Jesus' day, which is why in the Sermon on the Mount, he says over and over six times, you can see it in your Bibles in Matthew chapter 5, "You have heard it said, but I say to you." And so two Sundays ago, as Jesus is trying to get across to his people what it means to be righteous. Two Sundays ago, we listened together here in this room as Jesus said, "Murder originates in your heart, not in your hands." We saw that. You can see it in your Bibles, Matthew 5, verses 21 to 26. Jesus said that it's possible for a person who has never been involved in so much as a fist fight to have a more murderous spirit than a multiple killer. And then last Sunday, those of us who were here together, we listened as Jesus sat on the side of that mountain and he said to us in Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 to 32, "Adultery is not just about your body, it's about your heart." Jesus said last Sunday, there is a connection between the external action of adultery and the internal action of lust. Jesus said last Sunday, let's not just talk about where your body goes, let's talk about where your heart is going. In other words, you don't have to have any kind of physical contact with another person to be guilty of sexual sin. And Jesus said also at the conclusion of the paragraph last Sunday, if you want to ditch your wife, then remember there is no such thing as a disposable marriage. Well, today in Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 to 37, the passage that Dr. Cliff Anderson, our associate pastor emeritus, read for us earlier in our worship, Jesus continues his teaching of six case studies to demonstrate that what you are is more important than what you do. Matthew chapter 5, verse 33. We come to the law of oaths. O-A-T-H-S, the law of oaths, the law of vows. Verse 33, again, Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not break your oath, but keep the oaths you've made to the Lord." Now, unlike the first couple of case studies, this sentence is not a direct quotation from the Old Testament, but it's an allusion to a compilation of passages in the Old Testament. For example, let me give you a couple. You might want to jot these down, and I'll just read them to you. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 12. Leviticus 19, 12, where it says, "Do not swear falsely, God says, by my name, and so profane the name of your God. I and the Lord. In other words, to invoke the name of God to support a vow or an oath that is not going to be kept is to violate the third of the Ten Commandments, which is simply, you shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God. As Jesus says, you've heard it said, he's thinking of the Leviticus passage, but he's also perhaps thinking of Numbers chapter 30, verse 2, which reads, when a man makes a vow to the Lord or takes an oath to obligate himself by a pledge, he must not break his word, but must do everything he said. In other words, a vow is a promise to do something, and an oath is a promise not to do something. Both must be kept. Therefore, they must not be made carelessly. And perhaps Jesus, as he says, you've heard it said, also has in mind Deuteronomy chapter 23, beginning with verse 21, which says this. If you make a vow to the Lord your God, do not be slow to pay it. For the Lord your God will certainly demand it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. But if you refrain from making a vow, you will not be guilty. Whatever your lips utter, you must be sure to do, because you made your vow freely to the Lord your God with your own mouth. In other words, we must be completely honest before God and careful in our verbal commitments to him. How does this look in everyday life? God, if you'll just get me out of this mess, I promise I'll go to church every Sunday for the rest of my life. God, if you'll just help me make an A on this test, I promise, and you fill in the blank. You're pulled over by the police because they think you were speeding, but you know you really weren't, but they think you were, and that's really all that matters. And so you're sitting there and you're thinking about your parents and the fact that they're going to kill you when you get home. And you're going, God, if you just get me out of this without a ticket, I promise I'll set my crews in school zones to make sure that I don't speed. And so, in other words, we must be completely honest with God and be careful in our verbal commitments to him. Now, in Matthew chapter 5, verse 33, the words of Jesus are a composite of the traditional ideas of the religious experts based on Old Testament verses like some of the ones I just read. And so Jesus cites tradition, which says, do not break your oath, but keep the oaths you have made to the Lord. Now, just as the rabbis, the Pharisees, the religious leaders tended to be permissive in their attitude toward anger, as we've seen, and toward lust, as we've seen, and toward divorce, they were permissive today with another example that comes from the Old Testament, that they're trying to make the Old Testament easier to obey. So they're trying to take the Old Testament demands that God has placed on them and shrink them and make them easier to obey. And so the oaths and the vows of which Jesus speaks here are made with a formula. And there's this formula or this recipe that they use that involves the use of God's name, because the one swearing, the one making the oath, is using God as his guarantor, as his co-signer in making the oath. They're basically saying, God, you will guarantee my honesty. And you're doing that because I'm pulling your name into the vow. So it makes my words more dependable and more reliable and guarantees their honesty. It's kind of like the modern example of co-signing for a loan for someone. So just imagine you have an adult kid, just got married, you know, doesn't have the resources you have. I know my wife and I didn't. Don't have the credit you have. And they need someone to co-sign for them. So you get a phone call. Hey, Mom. Hey, Dad. It's me. Could you co-sign for our apartment for us? And so you co-sign as the guarantor for them to be able to do that. It's similar to that with using God, calling him in as the guarantor in making a vow. For example, the Pharisees would swear by God that such and such is true, or they would make a promise by God's name to do something. In the Old Testament, such oaths were actually encouraged. For example, Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 20. This is what the people were told in Deuteronomy 10:20. Fear the Lord your God and serve him. Hold fast to him and take your oaths in his name. According to Jeremiah chapter 12, verse 16, oaths were to be a part of a life that is committed to God. But once a promise was made, it was not to be broken under any circumstance. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 puts it this way. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty with your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. When you make a vow to God, do not delay in fulfilling it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to vow than to make a vow and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin. And so once a vow or an oath was made, it was not to be broken. So as you can imagine, with human nature being what it is by the time of Jesus, the teaching of the Bible regarding oaths has come under amazing abuse. For example, some rabbis during the time of Christ are teaching that an oath is not binding if you omit God's name or if you do not imply God's name. So as long as you don't bring God into the oath, then it really doesn't mean much. Therefore, if you swear by your own life, you know, I swear by my own life. Or you swear by someone else's life. You know, I swear by Pastor Jim Rimberg's life. Or you swear by the life of the king. I swear by King whoever. King Ted Gideon. I swear by your health. Not my health, but your health. Or I swear by your beard. Anyone here with a beard? Raise your hand. Anyone here with a beard? Okay. I swear by John Lillis's beard. Or I swear by your hair. Or I swear by your teeth. But avoid mentioning or alluding to the name of God. If you do that, you're not bound by your oath because God isn't a part of the recipe. He isn't a part of the equation. So you can say, I didn't really mean it because I didn't mention God's name. Evasive swearing during the time of Christ, and when I say swearing, I don't mean using cuss words and profanity words. That's another sermon, another time, but I'm talking about making an oath or a vow. Evasive swearing during the time of Christ has become a fine art. It's a performing art, like playing cello or like acting in theater. A creative lying has become a visual art, like watercolor painting or photography. Evasive swearing, half truth telling is a craft, like texting with one hand while you're driving. That's another sermon, another time. Falsehoods are being spun like Rumpelstiltskin spinning straw into gold. And so vows and oaths are like taking Lego pieces or Lincoln logs and using them to build lies. The height of accomplishment is to convince someone that you are telling the truth by using some person or some famous object in your formula and trying to outdo others with the objects they use in their formula. So how would this look today? Well, if I'm trying to convince you that I'm telling the truth, I might say, I swear by Petco Park. And then you may come back and say, well, Pastor Carlton, I swear by the Coronado Bridge. And I say, I swear by Disneyland. And you say, I swear by a piece of Julian apple pie. And I say, I swear by Philip Rivers. And you say, I swear by LaDainian Tomlinson. I swear by Adrian Gonzalez. So the moral compass at the time of the Sermon on the Mount is completely haywire. The use of oaths has become like a child saying, I had my fingers crossed. So I'm standing there making an oath, and I got my finger crossed behind my hand. And I say, you know, Judith, I swear by the Coronado Bridge that blah, 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 blah. Well, my fingers are crossed. When someone takes a vow or they take an oath, they are in essence saying, I'm not lying, but I'm also not telling the truth. The truth of an oath is bound and strengthened by that which is invoked on its behalf. And so Jesus' contemporaries got to the point of saying that only speech that is spoken and uttered under oath can be true or had to be true. And so the culture has become a society of liars. Oath-taking is popular because people are liars. And we all know that when someone says, I mean it, swear to God, I'll swear on a stack of Bibles. We know that when people say those kinds of things, as God is my witness, the Lord knows, may God strike me dead if I'm not telling the truth, or more colloquially, if I'm lying, I'm dying. If you hear stuff like that, may I encourage you to take a step back. We had better watch out, and they had better watch out. We had better watch out because such a person is marking out an area of his or her life as true in distinction from the rest of his or her life, which is false. And so when we hear oaths in everyday life, sad to say, we can expect to be lied to. They had better watch out, because if they're lying and God doesn't strike them dead, then they are affirming that God doesn't know that they lied, or that God was not present when they swore the oath, or that God is not a righteous, just judge. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 33, Jesus cites tradition, which says, do not swear a false oath. Jesus lets the religious heavyweights know that he knows all about their hypocritical system of trying to get the ball over the plate and take the plate and double the width of it to make it easier to obey God's law. He's saying to them, I know all about your system of vows and oaths. Well, having demonstrated his knowledge of what's going on in verse 33, the rest of the next three verses, verse 34, verse 35, verse 36, Jesus says, I say, you shall not make oaths. I say, stop using the formulas in order to prove that you're truthful. Jesus says, I say, stop taking God's name and dragging it into your conversations when you're trying to convince someone that you did it or you didn't do something. Leave God's name out of it. Treat his name as precious and holy. And then Jesus now gives the correct interpretation of the law of vows and oaths. In verse 34, Jesus says this. You can see it in your Bibles there. It's as plain as day. Do not, what does it say? Do not swear at all. Because Jesus says, do not swear at all, some believers, such as Quakers, such as Mennonites, others of the Anabaptist tradition, hold the conviction that they ought not swear, meaning, I'm not saying use profanity, I'm saying make an oath, take a vow, that they ought not swear in any circumstance. And those who hold this position, and I know people who hold this position, they do so out of good motives and out of sincere reasons, because they would say, I always speak the truth, so why do I have to swear? And I respect them for always speaking the truth. But is that what Jesus has in mind here in verse 34? It seems to me that Jesus is saying that oaths are to be used only on important occasions. For example, when legal authorities demand it of us, like in a court of law. You've been down to the Hall of Justice, many of you, like I have jury duty, and you go through all of that, and you stand and you do this thing. They always kick me out. I just want to be on a jury once before I die. My wife is a jury queen. She's always on juries. I don't get it, but anyway. But we're supposed to give oaths only in the name of the Lord when we do something like that. Jesus, though, here is speaking to the flippant, uncalled for use of oaths that spice everyday speech. Jesus is not saying that vows and oaths are sin. Both the Old Testament and the New Testament are full of vows and oaths. Jesus is saddened by the nonchalant, flippant use of God's name or a sacred object to guarantee the truth of what is spoken. Jesus is saying, you know what? Don't go get every Bible in your house and pile it up and put your hand on God's precious holy word and say, I swear, to convince someone that you're telling the truth. Always tell the truth. So in verse 34, Jesus says, don't swear at all, either by heaven. You can see it there, verse 34. Don't swear at all, either by heaven. Any oath containing the name of God is binding, but others were not. So if a woman swore by heaven, she felt free to break her oath. It didn't really count. It's like having her fingers crossed. And Jesus goes on and says, do not swear either by heaven or by earth. If she swears by earth, she feels free to break her oath. Jesus goes on and says, don't swear by your head. If she swears by her head, she feels free to break her oath. But remember this, that whatever a person swears by is related to God, because God, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. God created everything. So every oath is in God's name, whether it's an oath by heaven or by earth or by Jerusalem or by your head or by your beard or by your hair or by Petco Park or by the Coronado Bridge or a piece of Julian pie. Everything is owned by God. Everything belongs to God. God is our creator. And so all oaths bring him in because he is sovereign king of all. We can't get rid of God. Everything we swear by involves God. Every lie that we speak is ultimately against God. Every false oath ultimately dishonors God's name. And so Jesus, having proven his knowledge of tradition in verse 33, and having told us in verses 34 and 35 and 36 that we shall not make vows or oaths, Jesus concludes his teaching here in verse 37 by saying, I say simply, say yes or no. In other words, only say yes if you mean yes, and only say no if you mean no. And more than anything else here, Jesus is saying, say what you mean and mean what you say. Speak what is true and only what is true. So men and women, boys and girls who are truthful will be truthful whether they are under oath or not, whether there's a stack of Bibles there for them to put their hands on or not. If they're going to be truthful, they're going to be truthful. So don't swear in order to say, now I'm telling the truth. Remember, if we're truthful people, we don't need an oath. We don't need to swear with our hands stacked on a stack of Bibles. Anything beyond a simple yes or no is unnecessary. So Jesus, he insists on the absolute truthfulness of every word that we utter. Truth does not have degree. A half-truth is a whole lie. God wants truth in everything. Jesus says, don't rely on loopholes and don't rely on technicalities when you're giving your word. We must say what we mean and mean what we say. We must have integrity. We must tell the whole truth and nothing but the whole truth. So help us, God. So when you RSVP, and you tell someone you're coming, keep your word and come. When you tell someone that you'll be there, that you'll do something, be there. Do it. If you say to someone after church, which we're prone to do as followers of Jesus, you know, someone shares something with you and you go, oh, I'll pray for you. Make sure you go home and pray for them. Better yet, to make sure you don't forget, just pray for them right there. Because you're like me sometimes, aren't you? You forget. You say, hey, can I pray for you right now? We must tell the whole truth and nothing but the whole truth, so help us God. And this isn't out of a sense of legalism or rigidity. It's because God, at his very nature, is truth. Jesus said, sanctify us by your truth. Your word is truth. And so as followers of Jesus, we want to be people who are known for our integrity and our truthfulness. So to have your yes be yes and your no be no means that there's no slippage between what you say and what you do. Can I say to you, this is one of the most challenging parts about being a parent. When you get the wear down, the beat down, and you have a heart to want to do certain things with your kids, and you mean well, and you're well-intentioned, and you say, hey, I'll go out and play catch with you, or I'll take you to do this, or we'll do this later, and later becomes much later, and by then, as a parent, you're just exhausted, and it's bedtime, or you have other more pressing things. It's just a hard thing to do, to model for your kids, this whole idea of no slippage between what you say you will do and what you do. It is such a struggle. To have your yes be yes and your no be no means that you do not appear to be anything else than who you truly are. Mark Twain said these words, quote, if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything. If you're telling the truth, I could call you at 3 a.m. and say, now, could you tell me again what happened, blah, blah, blah. You could just wake up and tell me. I could call you the next morning at 3 a.m. and say, could you tell me what happened? You could just tell me again. So what is an area of your life in which you struggle to be completely honest and tell the truth? And what are you willing to do about it? We want to be truthful people. Jesus wants us to be truthful people. I believe that you want to be truthful people. And so all I've been trying to say this morning is simply this. We should always tell the truth. We should be consistently honest. Lying has no place in our lives. And if we're truthful people, we don't need oaths, we don't need vows, we don't need a stack of Bibles. Our yes will mean yes, our no will mean no.